You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of March 22nd, 2016, and episode number 258. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. An interesting week in the news. A little thin out there, but there's some interesting updates, including one on the Polish merman. If you remember that one from last September, that was an interesting story that kept me stumped for quite a while. And now I have the answer. And we also have an Atlas bear sighting, MUFON statistics for the month of February, a little bit of an update there. And it's fine for dead time. Yes, it's fine for dead time. A woman disappears at the airport. I'm sure you've seen that video. I've got your explanation right here tonight. And also, we visit the Afflocalypse 2016. It's back. And fireballs continue to fall all over the world. And we'll also have the book of the week, an update on some conferences, conventions, and a whole lot more. Now, and I don't normally talk about politics and things going on in the world on this show. There's other shows for that, but I just want to quickly comment about the events in Belgium. And my thoughts and prayers are to those affected directly in Belgium and around the world. Anybody who knows anybody that's over there that could be directly affected. It's a pretty scary time that we're living in right now. And acts of terrorism, they can happen anywhere at any time. So my thoughts and prayers are on those affected in Belgium, no matter where you're at in the world. And on the good side, it's getting warm outside, and it's spring is officially here according to the calendar. Now I'm waiting to be able to swing a baseball bat outside and have some fun and be a kid again for the summertime and enjoy the nice weather. It's coming, they say. Dita has promised me that she put an order in for summertime, and it should be here pretty quickly. Actually, it's springtime, but I'll take either one of them at this point. Now, what's going on in the news of the paranormal? Well, I have some updates here that I want to talk about. I talk about them every single week. I know. I hear about it. But it's important to me because these events aren't just about me. It's things that I'm involved in here. But there's a lot of other wonderful speakers. And coming up April 16th, it's coming up really, really fast. I guess I better start my presentation, getting ready for that, I guess. Well, anyway, April 16th is the Butler Paranormal Convention put on by the Butler Organization for Research of the Unexplained, or BORU, B-O-R-U, and the Center for Unexplained Events, Q. And that's going to be taking place at the Tanglewood Senior Center, 10 Austin Avenue in Lindora, Pennsylvania. The event will run from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., and admission at the door is $10. It's pretty good. And you can also save a dollar with a donation of a non-perishable food item, and you must bring one food item for each ticket to be discounted. It's going to be a great time. Last year, there was a lot of people there, a lot of vendors, and there will be the same this year for certain. Scheduled speakers include myself, Karen Dolan, Ronald Murphy, Brett McGinnis, and Stan Gordon. Like I said, plenty of vendors on hand, psychics, mediums, all those vendors selling all kinds of cool stuff. And book signings, the Men in Black will be there, along with some door prizes, raffles, and they got some food. They got some good food. It's going to be a good time. Again, the 9th annual Butler Paranormal Convention in Butler, Pennsylvania, on Saturday, April 16th. If you want more information, let me know. It's all over. It's on Facebook, and you can go to the Butler Organization for Research of the Unexplained website and get a little bit more information. There's also information on Facebook as well. And if that's not enough, May 6th to the 8th, I'll be at the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Camping Adventure with host Eric Altman in Farmington, Pennsylvania. And along with myself, Stan Gordon will be there as well, Squatch Detective Radio host Steve Coles, Dave Dragason, and wildlife biologist Rob Gratzen. And a lot of other people will be putting on some interesting things as well. Not just speakers, but there's going to be some workshops as well. I know I'm the first speaker of the day, but there's a workshop before me about how to track and look for prints and create prints. And then after me, Eric Altman is doing a workshop also on how to create molds for tracks, which is awesome. It's cool to learn from these experts. I was going to talk a little bit about that. I have some tracks that I'm going to show off at that event, but that's cool. I can talk about other things and help work off of one guy and set up the next. But it's going to be all about kind of stuff like that. You're going to learn how to investigate cryptids, mostly Bigfoot stuff, but you're going to learn a lot about the wilderness. You're going to learn a lot about tracking. You're going to learn a lot about how to create tracks and a lot of the other aspects that go into cryptozoology. And also on Saturday, May 7th, Trapper John R. Tice from the TV show Mountain Monsters will be on hand to sign autographs, meet the crowd, and talk about the show Mountain Monsters. And rumor has it, it's not been confirmed, that other people from that show Mountain Monsters will also be on hand. It's possible, don't quote me, but that's the rumor I'm hearing out there in the street. It's going to be a lot of fun. A 3-day, 2-night public camping outing for Bigfoot researchers, enthusiasts of the paranormal, enthusiasts of cryptozoology, even skeptics. Hey, I don't care. I'm a little skeptical. I think you know that from listening to the show. And it's going to be a great time. It's going to be camping. I'm going to be roughing it, sleeping in a tent, the great outdoors. You won't find me in a hotel, but you can stay in a hotel if you want. The only downside to that is this event is being held at a campground, Benner's Campground, Benner's Meadow Run Campground. And if you do stay off of the area, you'll have to pay a $4.50 visitor fee per day. Now, $20 is the ticket for Saturday. That's not really that much for what you're getting. You're going to get a lot of information from all this. That's really nothing, to be honest with you. I mean, 5 speakers, all these workshops, hikes, day and night hikes, a cookout, meeting celebrities here. Come on, $20, that's nothing. Basically, Eric Altman just wants to recoup what he's putting into this. That's all he's doing. And all proceeds will benefit Unity, a Journey of Hope, and Fayette Friends of Animals, Animal Shelter. So it's not even trying to make money here. It's just trying to get people together and get some word out about some of this information. It's a great time. I did this a couple of years ago. I had the time of my life. It was a lot of fun. And just a few days after that event, again, that's May 6th to the 8th. On May 12th, I'll be speaking at the Westerville Public Library about cryptozoology. Interesting fact today, I just realized this. My book, Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist, which all of these presentations are basically around, my second edition came out 1 year ago today. Wow, okay, happy birthday, book. Maybe I'll buy it a cake. But it's a lot of fun writing books and being able to go out there and show off your work and talk about your work and what you're doing out in the field. But I better write another book since it's been a year, or otherwise no one's going to care about what I do anymore. Anyway, what else is going on? Well, there's one big event that I talked about last week, and it's about Prospect Place. If you've never heard of Prospect Place, Google it. Friends of Prospect Place is presenting a public ghost hunt event with author and investigator Jeff Scott Cole and Jonathan Robson. Jeff is the author of Ghostly Encounters, Confessions of a Paranormal Investigator. Now, I've read the book, and you know what I noticed? I was talking about this story last week. I just got this information right before the show went on the air, and I was thinking, I went through all my notes. I never made this book the book of the week. So this week, the book of the week is going to be Ghostly Encounters, Confessions of a Paranormal Investigator. Talk a little bit more in depth about that a little bit later in the show. But it's a great book. that I've had the pleasure of reading. And I also got to hang out with Jeff during a book signing in Mentor, Ohio at Barnes & Noble, which is, rock throwing distance of a place where I spent a lot of my youth as a, one of my first jobs right there in the food court at Great Lakes Mall. Lots of fun then. Great memories. Okay, we're done. Anyway, Jeff and Jonathan will be hosting a public ghost hunt on Saturday, April 2nd at Prospect Place in Dresden, Ohio. The event is for those 18 and older, and tickets will only be available in advance. So don't go knocking on the door at 10 o'clock at night wanting to come in. It ain't going to happen, folks. It's going to be full lockdown time. No tickets available at the door. The cost is only $30, and all proceeds will be a donation to the George W. Adams Educational Center. $30. That's nothing. That's a great price. And again, if I wasn't working, I'd be there. And I don't have the – well, crud. Okay, I do. I was going to say I don't have the Facebook thing, but if you're in the chat room, I got the Facebook linky-dinky here. I'll post that in the chat room. And if you want to get a hold of somebody, you can email the George W. Adams Educational Center at gwacenter@gmail.com and use the April 2 public hunt in the subject line and request the PayPal link if you want to pay with PayPal. If not, look it up on Facebook and get more information. There's also another link that I'll be sharing a little bit later on. And you can get a little bit more information, not only about this event, but the stuff going on with Jeff with this book. And you can find out about what he's writing and what this book is all about. But again, we're going to talk about that in a little bit. It's a great book. But first, we're going to jump into some cryptid news. And one of my favorite stories of last year, I don't know. I was captivated by this story. People thought it was just nuts, and they moved on. They just moved on. Not me. I really enjoyed this story. I thought it was awesome. It's about a video. If you haven't seen the video, I've thrown that in the chat room there. If you're not in the chat room, my goodness, you're missing out. I appreciate that you're listening in. Even if you're listening live somehow and not in the chat room, I still appreciate it. And if you're listening to an archive, I still appreciate you. I'm not going to hold against you. I get it. Life happens. We all can't be listening to the radio at 7 o'clock on a Tuesday evening. I get that. But you're missing out right now. It's a cool video. And it's the one of the short versions of this video. There's longer versions out there. And if you remember this video, what it is some guys dressed up in hazmat outfits. Not really full hazmat outfits. It's kind of a little fake, and that's kind of what has given this video away. And what they're doing is they're carrying this guy with a tail out of a river, and they're putting him on a gurney and at the side of what was called a lake. But it, in reality, when you see the larger video, you can tell it's actually a river. And it's just weird to see a merman, which is described in this video, being hoisted and put onto a gurney. September 23rd, 2015. Again, one of the strangest YouTube videos dealing with the paranormal I've seen in quite a while. I mean, it wasn't an outright fake. It wasn't an outright hoax. But you can tell by some of the details that something was amiss. It was the purported merman sighting in a lake filmed. It was kind of the perspective was from a bridge. It was quite an interesting video and one that was, again, likely fake or a hoax. But man, it was so elaborate. It just you couldn't figure out why it was created. What was the meaning behind this? Bits and pieces of that video began to show up, and like I said, it wasn't a lake. You could tell, but it was a shallow river. You could see some of the rocks, and you could see moving water, which would indicate a river. And everyone knew. Come on, everybody knew this was not a real merman. But what the heck was going on? Now a lot of people, like I said, they just moved on. They said, okay, it's fake. I don't care. Not me. I want the answers. I want to know what was going on. Now, I keep a little list. I have a little notebook over here. It's got all the books of the week in it. That's how I keep track of that. And I also keep track of unsolved stories that I've not found a solution for one way or the other. They've not been validated. They've not been invalidated, not labeled as a hoax. No one's come forward and said, you know, claimed responsibility saying that, yeah, that was me. I did that. And this is how I did it. These are unsolved stories. And this one has sat for quite a while, but not really put a whole lot of effort into it lately. But a few weeks ago, I decided to search again and I found the answer. And just kind of didn't have time to put it in the news. It's always been there. It's been on my little cheat sheet here for the last couple of weeks. But just so many other stories have been going on. I didn't really have time. Now, this week, it's a little slow out there for some reason. I'm not sure why. But we're going to talk about it tonight. Well, we are talking about it. Now, was this really a merman? That's the big key here. Was this actually a merman? Well, surprisingly, it was. Yes, it was a man with a tail pulled from a river in Warsaw, Poland. It's true. It happened. In fact, it was reported in Warsaw that numerous mermen and mermaids as well were recovered from aqueducts all around the city. It's true. It was in the paper and it was on the internet. So it really has to be true. It was said that there were these mermen and mermaids were safe and that they would eventually be taken on a tour of the city to make them feel welcome. Okay, this is kind of wacky. It's getting even weirder than the original video. I know. Hold on. Once the story went viral, the public relations manager behind the story revealed what it was all about. The merman video was actually a scene produced for a festival called Nawi Warzywiachi. Or Warzywiachi. I forget how they say it. Anyway, I would butcher that either way. It's basically translates to New Varsovians. Now, a Varsovian is the term for a resident of Warsaw, Poland. So when you translate this, Nowy Warszy, sorry, I'm just going to butcher that no matter if I try to say it 100 times. It really actually translates to New Warsaw. And it's interesting because this festival is based on they use this concept of the mermaids for this whole newer Warsaw thing. And the mermaid sightings were publicized in the Warsaw papers. But for some reason, it escaped those of us that were researching the story when it first broke. I guess people in Europe knew about it, and some of the paranormal news agencies in Europe had stuff about it. But for some reason, I didn't find it. But now I'm actually seeing archive stories from late September, early October that explained what happened. And here I was, like, trying to do research to find out, and lo and behold, it was out there the whole time. I just didn't see it. Now, the mermaid is the symbol of Warsaw, so the organizers of the festival used the siren, which is interchangeable with mermaid, as a symbol of sorts for the festival and used it as an art piece. The goal of the festival is to spread awareness of the culture of Warsaw and spread it to new residents as well as tourists. So the use of the siren or mermaid was symbolic. It was a symbolic representation since they were a different species, yet they were introduced to residents and toured the city and made to feel welcome, just as Warsaw wants new residents and visitors to feel. So it was kind of a sociology kind of, not really an experiment, but just kind of a living art form, a living art piece. And it was interesting. I wish the truth would have came out about that just so I could have slept better at night. Plus, I think it's a really interesting story how they used kind of viral marketing to put on an event like this. And it was a lot of agencies tied into this all around Warsaw to bring this event to the masses. And it was pretty cool. I just wish I would have known the truth behind it. I could have talked a little bit more about that event. Not that I have that many Polish listeners that, as far as I know from my stats. But anyway, it's just a really interesting story, and I think it's an interesting concept the way they did that to welcome people using fictional things. And now I've got another story here from across the ocean here. I'm going to put this link in the chat room here. Looks like the chat room blew up here for a second. And I'm back. And now this is a kind of another controversial thing, I guess. Controversial for me, because I actually feel a little bit differently about this story than I normally feel. And anybody who listens to the show knows that I'm a little bit skeptical about a lot of this stuff. And this latest video is a little interesting. And it's kind of a little controversial for me. And it's about the Atlas Bear. Now, you probably didn't see this. It's kind of an obscure video. It wasn't really shown too many places, and it's really not caught on with the normal usual suspects of like the anomalous, the unexplained mysteries and all this. It's not really hit the mainstream. I've only seen it on two places out there that I frequent, that I look up stuff for. But the Atlas Bear was a victim of modern firearms, which led to its extinction in the mid-19th century. In 1870 is the last known sighting of an Atlas Bear. And it was documented. It's kind of one of those as legend has it kind of stories. The last one was purportedly shot by a hunter. So it was the last time any one of them was seen in the wild, was when they were cut down by modern firearms. And it's interesting to note that also zoos of that time also contributed to the extinction of this relative of the brown bear, where they were being shipped to zoos all over the place. And it just it tipped the scales in favor of their extinction. And also during Roman times, the Atlas Bear was used in gladiator battles along with lions and tigers. So, yes, you have lions and tigers and bears. Oh, my. Now, the Atlas Bear lives, or I should say lived, in the Atlas Mountains, which would be where it derives its name from. Makes sense, right? Atlas Mountains, Atlas Bear. And that's in Algeria, Morocco, and Libya, which is in northern Africa. And this was the only known species of bear to exist in Africa. However, on March 17th, a video was uploaded to Facebook that showed a purported Atlas Bear. Again, it's on Facebook, but it's a French account. Somebody living in Algeria posted this, and it really hasn't made the rounds too far. And I was kind of waiting for it to blow up on Facebook somewhere, or blow up anywhere in the paranormal, either the anomalous, unexplained mysteries, or one of the other top paranormal places. But it hasn't. No one's really mentioned this. So was this video proof that this once mighty bear is not really extinct? Well, I took the liberty of posting this on a couple of cryptozoology-based Facebook pages. And, you know, I kind of expected a little bit of a negative reaction to it. And I just kind of put it out there like, here's the video. This is what's purported in the video. Here's a little bit of facts in case you're not familiar with an Atlas Bear that did go extinct in the mid-19th century. What do you think? Now, Dr. Carl Schuker, who's convinced, Carl Schuker is a cryptozoologist. He's written, I don't know how many books, like 30 some odd books, a very well-respected cryptozoologist. I respect him as well. But he is convinced that the animal is a striped hyena. Now, this is based pretty much on the large ears that that we see in the video. Others have commented that the creature is just a dog. Like I said, I'm not one to believe in too many stories. I'm usually pretty skeptical. I mean, I'm still skeptical of this, don't get me wrong. I don't think it's an Atlas Bear, but I also don't think that it's a striped hyena. I've seen plenty of video of striped hyena. I've seen them, the way they move. This thing is just standing there. And the ears, I think, are a misnomer. And based on drawings I've seen of Atlas Bears, this actually looks pretty good. And if you look at the muzzle of this thing, it's darker than the fur. And or it's lighter. I can't remember. I had to go look at this thing. But it's basically a kind of opposite of the striped hyena. It doesn't match a striped hyena, the coloration. Now, the hair's a little rough, but, you know, we don't have an Atlas Bear to use as a kind of a means of measuring what we're seeing here. So it's we're looking at drawings. We're looking at historical interpretations of Atlas Bears. So we don't have a live specimen to confirm that with. And I think sometimes people are just a little bit too quick to write things off. Now, me, I put the video out there, and I'm just kind of waiting to see if there's any more information out there. I'm not saying it's not an Atlas Bear. I'm not saying it is an Atlas Bear. I'm saying I want more information. And that's the problem with this video. It's only 35 seconds long, and all we see is an animal standing fairly still at the top of a hill. Now, it moves its head around a little bit. The ears come out, and they do look a little bit big for an animal like that. And we're used to, you know, the brown bears and black bears and grizzly bears. Their ears really aren't all that big. Grizzly bears do have pretty big ears, but they're pretty furry and large and intimidating, so we kind of don't focus on their ears all that much. The animal does seem bear-like. It doesn't seem hyena-like to me in its body language and how it moves. But again, 35 seconds, and we only see pretty much the front of this animal. We don't get to see the profile. We don't get to see its legs. If we saw its legs, I think it would be a dead giveaway if this was a dog or striped hyena, whatever it actually was. I even looked at zoos in Algeria. Some of them are pretty horrible conditions. Not sure if they actually have a striped hyena. It's interesting to note too that this area actually has wild hyenas in that area. So it's very well possible. I could be wrong about that, and it could be a striped hyena. It just doesn't look like one to me. And usually when people see those things, they kill them and they eat them pretty much right away because they're highly sought after for whatever reason, and they're kind of feared as well. So I don't think people would be standing at the bottom of a hill laughing at this thing. There's no visible fence line, so I don't think it's a zoo. And if it is a zoo, these people probably hop the fence, which I don't recommend anywhere, no matter what, even if it's penguins. I wouldn't recommend hopping any fences. But again, we don't see much of this animal. We don't really get to see it move around or be active or see its legs or its profile. And when you also consider the fact that there's been no other reports, no follow-ups, and granted, it's only been, 5 days? No follow-ups on this story whatsoever. That kind of doesn't bode well for Mr. Atlas here. So, you know, I'd have to kind of lean toward it's probably not what I think it is. It's probably not an Atlas bear. I would really hope that it would be. It would be really interesting to see a very large creature like this be proven to exist in the wild after so long of being supposedly extinct. It would be awesome, but highly unlikely in this case in such a crowded area. And even with the mountains, supposedly this bear came out of the mountains. There was a heavy snowfall, a rainfall. Something drove this particular creature from the mountains, it said. But again, a measly 35-second video and no follow-ups that I've been able to find so far in news reports. But I'm going to dig a little bit deeper. Now that it's the beginning of the week, I think maybe if something does pop up, it should pop up in the next couple of days. So I'm going to keep my fingers to the grindstone and see if I can dig up any more information on this particular video and see if one way or the other we can either validate or invalidate this based on this. But like I said, I don't normally feel so warm about the possibility of these things. When I see videos of creatures, it's usually, come on, that's not the Jersey Devil. That's not what you think it is. That's not the Loch Ness Monster. Come on, what's wrong with you? A hoax, or that's CGI, or that's somebody dragging something behind a boat, or somebody, you know, filming something with effects or something, camera effects. It's usually pretty convincing. And this isn't actually a living animal. You can tell that much by watching the video. It's something living. It's not fake. It's not CGI. It's not a dog wearing a costume. It could be a dog, but it doesn't behave like a dog. It looks like a large animal. It's pretty confident in its abilities to handle itself, but it's not sure what these yip-yapping pale creatures are at the bottom of the hill pointing their little phones at them. So something is going on in this video, but what it is, what that animal actually is, hopefully we can find the answer for that someday. But probably not. Probably just fade away in time, and we'll never really ever come to that conclusion. But hopefully one day I can dig up some information on that. So we're about halfway through the show, and at the point in which I need to remind you that you're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live from WCJVradio.com, and you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Now, an hour and a half from now, an hour after I'm done, be sure to tune in tonight, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern, as Frank Lee talks with Steve Hudgens, the MUFON Director of Investigations, live on the Paranormalities and Ponderings radio show with host Frank Lee, right here on WCJV Digital Broadcasting at WCJVRadio.com. Steve Hudgens, good show, a great guy, and man, MUFON Director of Investigations, what a job. It's kind of one of those dream jobs for me. That'd be a lot of fun. And speaking of MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, if you're not familiar with the acronym there, I finally got a hold of the February MUFON sighting statistics, even though it's almost April already. It's getting harder and harder each month to find these statistics. I'm a MUFON member, by the way, not that that means anything, but MUFON member here. So I get all the information behind the scenes of what's going on with a lot of these reports and monthly newsletter and all these things. But it's still hard to get these monthly sighting statistics. A lot of these state-by-state websites don't really update their stuff very much. And, you know, I promise you one day when I'm the director of MUFON, I'm going to fix all that. I'm going to get all this stuff going for you because information is power. And the more information that hits the people, the more that you know, the more that you can become involved with UFO research. And MUFON, Mutual UFO Network, is probably the largest reaching UFO organization in the world. And they have access to many investigators in each state that investigate any cases that pop up into their stream and disseminate the information and look at to see what it really means in the long run, in the big picture of things. And that's why I like these sighting statistics. They used to get a lot more technical than what they are now. And unfortunately, this month, I don't have the state-by-state breakdown. Typically, California is the number one state. But the fault with that is that if you look at the population, California is the number one most populous state. California has more people living in it than the entire country of Canada. That's a lot of people. So if you break it down sightings by state and you look at it per capita, basically per 100,000 people, California would not be number one. California would be usually somewhere in the middle. So that's interesting to look at the per capita stats, and they unfortunately don't really do that anymore. I don't know why. They were doing that early on, I think 2014, somewhere in the middle of the year, and then they just kind of got away from it. And I really enjoy that stat because that's what is meaningful about this. I could give you all these numbers. Even if I had the state-by-state numbers, it really doesn't mean anything unless you really break it down per capita. And I guess I could do that if I had the time and if I had the numbers and just divide everything out for you. I guess I could do the work, but don't have the state-by-state breakdown. But looking at the statistics, the overall worldwide reports and U.S. reports, looking at last year, January had 721 reports. And this year, 2016, in January, had 687 worldwide reports. A slight dip, but not all that much, statistically speaking. United States had 502 out of the 687. And February last year, it's typically the lowest number of reports, probably for a couple of reasons. One, it's usually, well, it is the shortest month of the year, even on this year, which was a leap year. It's still shortest, 29 days or 28 days the other 3 years other than the leap year. So it's the shortest month. So yes, you have a little bit less reporting time. Plus, it's typically the coldest and snowiest month of the year here in the Northern Hemisphere, hence the lowest number. And it was by far last year, 607 in 2015. And the next closest was actually a very long month of December, 624 reports in December. Quite a dip. Last year was the number one reporting year overall, 10,911 reports for the entire year, the most in MUFON history. And June was the number one month overall in MUFON history, with 1,402 reports worldwide in that month, and 1,180. So looking at February, last month of this year, 611 worldwide reports, again, versus 607 in February of last year. So that's pretty much in line. You're adding one more day with the leap year. And 443 of those were here in the United States. Obviously, MUFON is based here in the United States, so you're going to have more reports here than anywhere else. And a lot of other countries have their own UFO reporting centers, so not bad. And hopefully I can at least bring these statistics to you. Got a few contacts in MUFON. Maybe I'll ask them nicely if I can get a little bit more information. I know one of the directors in one of the states, I won't mention what state, kind of got a little upset when I asked them for the information. But again, I think it's important to look at these statistics. Regardless, you know, a lot of these are explainable. A lot of these are from our influx of meteor sightings that I'll talk about here in a minute. But some of them, not so much. There's something going on out there. And that's what these stats are for, are to look for the crumbs, the little crumbs out there that point toward the reality of what's going on in the skies over this little marble floating through space. So with that, we're going to go to Ghost News. One little story here in Ghost News. Kind of a weird story, kind of out there, kind of weird, but I had to talk about this. I had to talk about it. It's got to do with dead time. Everybody loves dead time. And you might have heard of dead time. I don't know if you have or haven't. I don't know. I'm not sure what you know. According to many, dead time is a time where ghosts and spirits are the most active. Why 3 a.m.? Well, there's a lot of theories behind that, and I won't really get into that. But 3 a.m. is the time. That's to many people, that's the magic hour. I always thought it was midnight, but I learned getting in this field that, nope, midnight is early. That's the pre-party. 3 a.m. is when it gets fun. And also, 3 a.m., as it turns out, is also the best time to receive deliverance from evil. I didn't know that either, but I guess it's true, because this is according to the Kingdom Church in South London in England. It's also the time to get, quote, deliverance from sickness, financial hardship, and demonic soul ties, unquote. Huh. And that, again, is according to the church's website, the Kingdom Church in South London. What else sounds well and good and harmless, right? Well, that's unless you happen to live near the Kingdom Church, as these early morning services, again, 3 o'clock in the morning, tend to contain loud preaching and amplified music, according to neighbors of the church. Council leaders were forced to fine the church over 7,000 British pounds, or for us, that's just over $11,000 U.S. The church was found guilty earlier this year of 2 charges under Section 80 of the Environmental Protection Act of 1980. The city had attempted to work with church leaders, but say their efforts have been ignored. Well, you know where they're at 3 o'clock in the morning. So maybe, you know, go in there and be delivered from evil, whatever you got to do. Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't know. Who knows? Whatever works, whatever's putting money in the little basket, I guess. Little freaky story, a little weird. I know. In other news, the big viral video. I'm sure everyone's seen this. You had to have seen this thing. It's been floating around the internet. It's probably one of the biggest stories going around right now. It's this weird, mysterious lady. This lady just disappears into thin air. Her and her blue jeans and a little blonde hair just disappear into thin air. What is going on in this video? My goodness. A lot of people nailed it. I watched it and I laughed because I love magic. I love sleight of hand. Most people in the paranormal like magic because it's a lot of skeptics like it too, because they understand that magic is very tied into the paranormal, because there's a lot of misperception. There's a lot of sleight of hand. There's a lot of things that we see that fool us into thinking we're seeing other things. And this takes place at the Copenhagen Airport in Denmark. The video shows a man being interviewed by TV2 with a few people in the background. There's a woman wearing a black jacket that walks by pushing a cart of luggage and passes a woman in again, blue jeans. And just as the woman in black walks by, the other woman disappears. She's gone. Wow, where did she go? I mean, she's gone, like boop, poof. Surprised there was no smoke, you know? It was just gone, like a ninja. Was she a ghost? Maybe a demon? Did she jump in this lady's luggage? Is she from another dimension? Was this clever editing? Which a lot of people said this is just editing, that that somehow the people at the news channel just kind of cut her out of there. Well, no. I why would they just cut some lady from the background out unless she's, you know, swearing or you know, jumping up and down or flicking the camera off? Even then, you're just going to see little pixels over her. She's just going to disappear into thin air. Well, obviously, a lot of people nailed it. They understood how the visualization thing worked. It's just by chance that the woman turned and walked behind the woman in black, giving it the appearance that she disappeared. And if you watch the video slow down, you can clearly see the woman's shoes for a brief second as she turns, because it kind of looks like she's just kind of hanging out there. And that's why the illusion is so good. I don't think you could time it out any better or create it any better than what you see here. That's the magic behind this thing, is that it's just perfectly timed. That it looks like she's just going to stand there. She kind of turns and almost looks like, I think she talks to a lady or something or whatever, but then she just kind of turns to her left. And then, so you think she's just going to stand there, but then she must turn again and follow this lady. And as she, you can also see, if you watch as she, for a brief second, as she turns behind the woman in black, you can see her blue jeans through the other woman's right arm and her body. As she's holding on to that cart, you can see in that little gap between her elbow and her body, you could see the little flash of her blue jeans. And again, it's just clever timing and angles. And I'll cover a little tip of the week here, for a little tech tip of the week, I guess. If you don't know how to slow down a YouTube video, it's really, really easy. Now, when you go to YouTube and you pull up a video, you have the video there on the top, and then on the right-hand side, you have other videos. You have the video coming up next, and then other suggested videos. Then below that, you have a description of the video, and then comments below that. That's what I would call normal video mode. Now, if you put your cursor over the video, you'll see a little horizontal line showing the progress of the video. And below that, you have all these little buttons and things. On the left, you have a play button. The next button is a forward to the next video button, I guess. I don't know what the technical term is. And then to the right, there's three other buttons, sometimes four, if there's closed captioning available for that particular video. There's one that's got all the way on the right-hand side, four-corner rectangle. It's got little four little points on it. It's not a full rectangle, though. Now, if you click on that, you get full screen. It turns, goes to the whole full screen. Then you press escape to get out of that full screen mode. The full rectangle offers what's called theater mode, which basically centers the video in the middle of the page. It doesn't do too much fancy. It just kind of gets rid of the stuff there on the right-hand side. And then if you notice, there's the little wheel thing, which if you have a smartphone, you probably recognize it as the settings menu, and that's what this is here. If you click the settings menu, you'll get a list of options available from that particular video, as well as an autoplay option. And from the bottom, you'll have a quality button thing. You can click on that and change the quality 480p to whatever else you want, and for better or worse. And then you also have the speed option. Now, if you click speed, you'll get a range of numbers from 0.25 to 2. And it usually selects, well, hopefully select normal. We'll be in the middle of that. So 0.25 slows down the video. And if you press that and then you press play, the video will play at a quarter speed. And 2 speeds it up. Now, I frequently watch these videos in slow mode to assess them for details, just like the woman here that disappeared. Now, you'll notice a lot of these videos will slow it down for you anyway. They'll show the fancy UFO taking off. They'll show this creature limbering across the road or whatever happens, or this lady disappearing into thin air in fast motion, then they'll slow it down for you. But I like to control that myself. And even the slow-mo on .25 is also cool because it slows it down even more, which is great. And you can pick out a lot of details. And I know it's crazy, but even speeding things up sometimes, you can pick up intricate details. So that's your tech tip of the week here. I don't know if I'll do that every week, but it just sounds cool. So if you don't know how to assess YouTube videos, that's one way to kind of poke around and play around with looking at some of these details. And you might see what you're missing, if that makes any sense. So the Afflocalypse, I mentioned this at the top of the show. The Afflocalypse is returned. 2011 was the year of the Afflocalypse, when everyone was losing their minds over the mounting stories of mass die-offs of birds, fish, and other wildlife, which began early in the year and did not seem to let up at all. It just kept going and going. It was so hot that at the end of the year, it made my number two story in my annual top 10 paranormal news stories for that year. Only the Jerusalem UFO video beat that story in 2011. Or I should say Jerusalem UFO videos could beat that story in 2011. Now, every now and again, I'll read about a story or two that talks about mass die-offs. And I've had a few already this year, which is weird because it's starting to gain a little bit of momentum, I think. But just like 2011, they're usually normal circumstances, as die-offs are part of the circle of life, or you could say cycle of life. Either way, large group of animals die off all the time, especially this time of the year, in the springtime. The snow is melting. Animals do what they do when the weather gets warm. And, well, we can't talk about that on the radio, but they do what they do. And you know that. You saw that in high school, I'm sure. This week, there's a story out of southern Chile, as over 4 tons of sardines have washed up on local beaches. Yikes, I can just smell that now. While it might be of concern about how they died, locals are seemingly only concerned about the possibility of the dead fish polluting the water, as this could lead to losses to local fishermen, as well as to seaweed harvesters. The locals would like the authorities to clean up that mess. I'm sure it stinks pretty bad. Meanwhile, hundreds of thousands of dead sea slugs have been washing ashore in Thailand since March 7th. Local scientists are studying the issue, as there is concern over how this was caused. Was it pollution or possibly disease? That's not good. Also this month, reported on March 17th, over 130 goats died in central Mexico. Whew. What a sight that had be. That's got to be. That's crazy. 130 goats. Now, it sounds mysterious and it sounds like some kind of conspiracy, but it's thought to be from hypothermia. I guess goats get cold. Didn't know that. But could also be from as yet to be determined disease. So they're not sure. Tests are ongoing. It's only 5 days ago, so we'll find out. March 15th, it was reported that hundreds of crows fell from the sky and died on train tracks in Springfield, Michigan, in just a 200-yard span. Now, again, mass die-offs are normal, especially crows. Birds in general have mass die-offs this time of the year. It's nothing out of the ordinary. But a 200-yard span is weird. And the way they died is even weirder. Necropsies were performed on the birds that showed that they died from some sort of impact. And the birds showed broken bones. Now, this is an Amtrak train. Track. So were they all unable to get out of the way of a train that was passing through? It's possible. It's possible, but that's a lot of birds. A lot of birds, hundreds of them. To get out of the way of a train, I don't know. That seems a little far-fetched. Now, sometimes birds have been known to fly into the ground and be killed that way. It's possible that's also happened. Now, they do know from testing these birds that they were not poisoned. They didn't seem to be poisoned anyway, as their stomachs were all empty. And what makes this story even stranger, if that wasn't strange enough that all these birds died in a 200-yard area, a similar incident happened last month a few hundred yards from this one. Granted, it included a few less birds than what happened here. than this incident, but still two things in the same area. It's a little weird. It's a little strange. March 4th, it was reported about dead seabirds washing ashore in Volusia County in Florida. Now, since mid-February, a few dozen northern gannets have been found dead on the beach. The birds are still being found, but it's been reported that the numbers of dead found are dwindling. These deaths are also mysterious, but are thought to be caused by, again, the beginning of their migration season and just nature doing its job. And over 800 dead waterfowl were removed from reservoirs in Spain in an incident still under investigation by authorities. It's thought that this may have been caused by bacteria in the water, as various ducks have perished, and it was not limited to a specific species. Now back to Chile, as salmon farms have been devastated by harmful algae blooms that have killed off millions of salmon. Between two companies, it's been estimated that nearly half of their crop has died so far, with estimates as high as 3 million fish, causing nearly $40 million in damage. Scary stuff. But again, when you put them all together, it sounds scary, but individually, it's explainable. But some of these stories are a little weird. Now, speaking of weird, this story is kind of building in momentum. It's got me a little freaked out. I'm not going to lie about it. I've been talking about the increase in invisible fireballs falling from the sky all year, and it just doesn't seem to be subsiding. So far in March of this year, there have been 6 major fireball sightings over the United States. Major. These were massively reported over multiple state areas. Again, fireballs is basically when a meteorite breaks up in the atmosphere, creating a large, bright light that lasts a lot longer than the typical shooting star. And these events are seen, again, in multiple areas. It's not just a local event where if you see a shooting star, it's usually a very small piece. It's just a really quick flash. It may seem really, really super, super far away, but you're not going to see it too far away. These major events can be seen regionally over multiple states. Now, so far, these events this year have eclipsed the total of the same time period last year. Last year, there were 839 reports, which was a huge increase from the year before. And so far this year, 910 large fireball meteor sightings in 2016. That's a pretty big increase again. And it's only March. So is there something to be alarmed about? Well, the American Meteor Society feels that this is just a matter of these sightings being reported, and there probably isn't anything to worry about. Probably. Oh, thanks for the confidence. None of the fireballs seen this year could have caused any problems, as again, they were very small. But the question is, why the increase in larger fireballs? Now, it's interesting to note that in April, the Lyrid meteor shower will be taking place between April 16th and April 25th, with the largest concentration happening on April 22nd. Unfortunately, if you do your homework, that's also when the moon will be at its fullest. It's going to be a full moon that week. So it's going to kind of drown out any ability to see these things, but it won't count against the number of UFO reports that'll probably be put in that time of the year as well. So with that, I'm going to jump to the book of the week. And as I mentioned earlier, the book of the week is my friend Jeff Scott Cole's book. Let me get the link here, throw it in the chat room for everybody in there to check it out. Dita to do her magic on the cover here. And it's Ghostly Encounters. Ghostly Encounters, Confessions of a Paranormal Investigator. Really interesting book. And Jeff has done some really cool stuff with this book. Now, I liked it because I'm from Mentor, Ohio. I grew up in Mentor, Ohio. It's normally when you see the word mentor, M-E-N-T-O-R, it's pronounced mentor. But us local folks, especially here in Ohio, we pronounce everything kind of weird. Mentor. It's like M-E-N-N-E-R is kind of how we pronounce it. But anyway, that's how you know if somebody's actually from the city. But it's kind of a local book for northeastern Ohio. But you're kind of getting the feel for how he got into this field. And he talks about Menor Municipal Cemetery and the Madison Seminary, which I've also been there a few times. Menor Municipal Cemetery, I used to go by there to go to school every day. And drove by there for many years going to work every day. And it's just cool to read about an area that I grew up with. I didn't know Jeff until last year when we were talking about his book, and I got to meet him at an event, a book signing in Menor. And this book is really interesting. It does cover a lot of these places and things, but it also talks a little bit about technology and some of the stuff behind it. Now, one thing that Jeff did in this book is it's got QR codes and little links, bit links, which contain links to EVP or to websites. And the website that is in the chat room, ghostlyencounters.net. Now, from this, you can get all the QR code information. That's where they're all linked to for the Ghostly Encounters Confessions of a Paranormal Investigator book. But it's a great idea. I wish I would have thought of that before. I could have linked to all kinds of information in my books as well. It's an awesome idea. It's a great interactive book. And it's one thing to sit there and talk about EVPs, but it's a different thing to be able to allow people to listen in at the same time when he's describing these things. Now, Jeff has a background in science, a background in teaching. He's a writer, a former middle school teacher, and an archaeologist. He has a Bachelor's of Art in Anthropology from Cleveland State University. So he's a scientist. He knows his stuff. And he's also a writer, so that makes this book that much more easy to read. Sometimes these books, I'll tell you what. Anyway, it reads really well. And his background in science shows throughout this book. The book provides a glimpse into the inner workings of the paranormal groups, the good, the bad, the ugly. It's also filled with a lot of tips and experiences. Again, it's like behind the scenes, and he pulls no punches on us. He changes the names to protect the innocent in some cases, and it does air some dirty laundry about the reality of investigating with groups, which I think a lot of people need to read. I wish I would have read that before forming my group. I probably would have thought twice, to be honest with you. And the book will hopefully allow you to not make some of the mistakes that he made during his journey. I wish I would have had a book like this to read before I started out in the field. Didn't get that kind of bracing about what was to come. But beyond the politics and the learning curve, which is important, I think it's a great aspect of this book as well. There's also a lot of history about the locations in the book. And in the back of the book, there's also a state-by-state haunted directory, as well as a list of some of the groups in around some of these states, which is kind of a lost thing. You used to get there's like one website out there that does that, but they're kind of horrible at keeping up to date on it. They rely on the people that submit it. And there used to be books out there that had all these groups listed. So it's kind of cool to see that. And again, he does start talking about stuff that's local here in Northeast Ohio, but then kind of expands. And he does talk about the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum, and also the event where he's having the event on April 2nd. Prospect Place Manor is also in the book. Ohio State Reformatory, probably hands down my favorite place to investigate all time. I know all the intricate details of this place. I know all the good places to have things happen. And I know when shift change happens at the other prison, all these other things. So not just that, but it feels like home walking into that place. I know it sounds crazy to say that a prison sounds like home, but it's a nice place to investigate. And it was really cool to read that as well. Somebody else's perspective on investigating that. There's a list of places to investigate here, and I highly recommend you find this book and read it. It's a great book. Again, it's somebody else's experiences, which there's been a couple of books I've talked about recently about those kind of things. But it's always good to learn from other people. And this book, like I said, is chock full of hit tips and hints. I don't think you can combine those two words into one word, Brian, but tips and hints about investigating, about working with groups, which is also kind of something that's not really discussed too much, and I think it should be a little bit more. He does a really good job. It's a great job. It's put together really, really nice. Ghostly Encounters, Confessions of a Paranormal Investigator, the book of the week this week. Awesome book. Check it out. It's It's on my bookshelf. It's a good book. It's anybody getting into the field should read books like these. Other people's experience. For some reason, you know, people don't want this. They just want to jump in. They watch Ghost Hunters. They watch Ghost Adventures. You know, they watch it on Netflix. You know, they watch the season in one night and they're ready to go. Well, you know, that's great. That's well and good. But learn from those that have made mistakes. Learn from those that have experience. It'll do you wonders. It'll keep you out of trouble a lot of times. And I highly recommend that. And as well as visiting conferences and conventions and other type of paranormal gatherings. Didn't get much time to talk about other than the ones that I'm involved with, but check them out. ParanewsInsider.com. Click on the events tab at the top. There's a whole bunch coming up in April that we'll be talking about next week. April is like the beginning. The floodgates are open for all these conferences, conventions in ghosts, UFOs, and cryptozoology. All this stuff coming up. I just updated this listing, added a couple of more. There's some stuff coming up pretty soon. Check it out again, ParanewsInsider.com. Click on the events tab at the top. If you have any information about any event and would like to hear it here as well as see it on the website, let me know. There's a contact page there. You can contact me at insider@ParanewsInsider.com. And big thanks to everybody there in the chat room. Usual suspects in there. I see you guys. Hello. Roger's there. Cheryl's there. Kat's there. Dita, as always, and huge thanks always to Cindy, my producer. She's the hardest working person behind the scenes there. And to Dita, also, for corralling the chat room, keeping everyone in line. And everyone else out there, whether you're listening live or in an archive, I highly appreciate you taking the time to listen to this show and willing to listen to anything that you have to say. If you have a new story, you have any information about any story, or again, a conference or convention that I did not list, let me know. As always, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, and the hair standing on the back of your neck. And always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.
Okay, you're clear.
Yeah.
Good show.
Thank you.